welcome to Season 8, Episode 6 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be discussing buying hardware that runs Linux. We'll also have some command line love, and we'll go over your feedback. I'm Laura, and joining me this week are Alan.
Hello, I am
Martin.
Really here.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh my gosh.
My microphone's just decided to sag. Yes. What have we been up to?
I had my birthday. It seems like ages ago.
Yeah. What, since you were born? Oh, no.
No, it was my birthday a couple of weeks ago. And my wife asked me what I wanted for my birthday. And I said, look, just look at my Amazon wish list, which is what I tell you to do every year and every Christmas. And, you know, and she said, but there's a video card at the top of the list. And I said, yeah, I know. There's a game I really want to play and I really want a video. But that's not exciting for you. Why? You know, you don't want to open a video card on your birthday. I'm like, how long have we been married? You don't know me if you don't think I would want. So I didn't get it. So, I did say, you know, if you don't buy me the card, I'm going to buy it anyway. So I'll probably buy it anyway.
So what did you get?
All kinds of stuff, actually. I got a few toys for the kids, a couple of kitchen gadgets, an insanely bright torch that I feel compelled to shine in my own eyes and get this big blur in front of my face whenever I do that. I think I should actually just opt for psychological help on my birthday next time rather than an Amazon wish list. But there you go. So yeah, that's it really.
Martin, what have you been up to?
A couple of episodes ago, we talked about a Raspberry Pi jam at Egham. And after the show, Popey and I discussed the idea of putting Ubuntu Mate on some micro SDHC cards for the Raspberry Pi 2. So I've got 24 micro SDHC cards and 12 USB to micro SDHC adapters and a 12-port USB hub. And I'm going to be using Richard Hughes's multi-writer to try and flash 24 or 12 at a time cards with Ubuntu Mate for the Raspberry Pi to take to the Pi Jam to hand out to people.
That's awesome.
So, I'm just putting the finishing touches to a new build of Ubuntu Mate for the Raspberry Pi 2 for that event.
Cool.
How about you, Laura? What have you been up to?
Yeah.
It's just like both of us wait and... Oh, yeah. We have to ask Laura. Yeah.
I just got back from holiday, you know.
Yeah. Where you been?
America.
Get you. New Brave New World.
Yeah, I know. And I've got a blog on it and everything.
You've created a whole separate blog just for the fact that you went to America.
Well, I created a Tumblr page. I don't know if that's the same thing.
Okay.
Never used Tumblr before. But my app exports to Tumblr quite well, so, you know. But yeah, I went to Boston and Missouri and North Carolina and Virginia and New York.
Did you travel public transport, get hire cars, or what did you do?
Everything.
Oh, really? Well, all at once?
Yeah.
You had a motorcycle in the back of a hire car on a train?
Yeah. Now, I did trains, planes, and automobiles.
Excellent. Awesome. Take lots of photos?
I took lots of photos, and I'll put a link to the blog, the Tumblr page, in the show notes.
Dragging it back on topic, did you take your Ubuntu phone with you?
I did.
Did it work?
Did it work in America? Yeah.
It did, yes. Oh. I put my normal SIM into it as a kind of backup phone, but it doesn't have very good data roaming and things on that SIM.
Oh, no.
But it worked. I could check for text messages and emails and things.
Let's leave it there, shall we?
Yeah.
Let's get on with the show.
I should have tested it more, really.
Brilliant. Well, welcome back. Good to have you back.
Thank you. So, we are going to think about how we support Linux by buying hardware. So I didn't write these notes, so I'm going to ask you guys, how do we support Linux by buying hardware?
Well, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked it, Laura.
Martin!
It's tricky because, you know, that this is a subject that comes up all the time. You know, people say, I want to buy a thing, whether it's a laptop, a router, or whatever, and I want to support Linux, or I want to use the thing that, you know, I'm enthusiastic about. And I just wanted to look and see if the landscape has changed or whether the situation is exactly as it has been, you know, for the last 5 years. So I just wanted to see where we are.
So is this like me getting my Dell?
Well, that's one excellent example, actually, is, you know, you've gone to a tier one mainstream company like Dell that advertise, mm-hmm. you know, on TV and in newspapers and magazines, and they do, you know, marketing drops through people's letterboxes. They're a well-known brand, and they actually sell Linux machines, you know.
Yeah.
That's great.
And they're still doing it even after, what, 3 years?
Yeah, and the new model came out a few weeks ago. In the UK, Canada, and US, you can get the new generation Dell XPS 13 Sputnik, and there's a couple of others as well, mm-hmm. a couple of other models of Dell. But, yeah, that's not the only option, but it feels like it's the only tier one option. It feels like, you know, we're a few years on from the first Sputnik, and it's still a niche product that we rave about. You know, it's still not got to that point where I could walk into PC World and buy one. And it's still not got mm-hmm. to the point where I can go to Dell's website and type in Linux or type in Ubuntu or whatever favorite distro and get like a choice, you know, because Linux is about choice, right? I get a choice mm-hmm. of laptops or servers or desktops or whatever. And that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you struggle in the server sphere, really, do you? I think everyone sells their hardware, not necessarily pre-installed with Linux, but absolutely servers are guaranteed pretty much to support Linux these days.
Right, and they're generally shipped naked anyway, so...
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
But I don't think you're necessarily supporting Linux by buying servers from a tier one vendor, because they're just selling hardware. I mean, you can say that they're all... I mean, IBM and Dell... HP to some extent are all contributing to Linux and open source in some way or other, but it doesn't feel like you're really supporting somebody that's backing Linux as the principal platform, and this is what their business is all
right.
about.
You know, you hear like mainstream news articles about Linux, and it frustrates me no end whenever I see Rory Kethlin Jones or someone on the BBC to say, oh, here's this new Linux thing that's been made by people in their bedrooms. And I just think, oh, yeah. my God, it's just so not true. You know, people can sit in their lounge as well.
Ago,
you know,
that,
they don't have
yeah. 10 years ago, that was right. true. You know, that Linux was predominantly made by volunteers and enthusiasts. But I think the landscape has changed massively.
But now you've got companies yeah. like Intel and years. IBM and, you know, loads of others, and smaller companies like Calabra. And you've got companies like the Document, or organizations like the Document Foundation and Mozilla Foundation making free software. So it's not just, you know, hairy individuals in their pants in their bedroom making software. It's like people in suits in offices that you would with brand names you would recognize, and
yes, you know, that you'd normally buy from.
Right, and if I buy an Intel CPU, you know, partially I'm funding that guy who works on the Intel GPU driver, the free software Intel GPU driver. That's got to be a good thing. And if I buy my video card from AMD, you know, they make free software drivers, you know, I should do that rather than buy my Nvidia card or buy my laptop from a company that only supply it with Windows pre-installed. So, you know, you do have some choice, and you are kind of influencing that thing, although, you know, the amount you spend on a laptop doesn't make a huge dent in the bottom line of someone like IBM or Dell, right?
I think if you buy an Intel CPU, though, it's a bit opaque whether you're buying that to run Linux or Windows or BSD or any other operating system. And it's also the same with NVIDIA graphics cards, or in fact any GPU. They don't really know what the end usage is. So unless you're buying a pre-packaged solution that is fronted by an organization that is... extolling the virtues of Linux and making sure that their hardware is a Linux compatible platform, then that registers as a sale for Linux compatibility in my book, rather than component sales, which could be used for anything.
Yeah, I guess that's fair, you know, but it's to me, it's the same as, you know, voting with your wallet when, you know, when you see some news story about how a pharmaceutical company is doing something you disagree with, or a, you know, a chocolate manufacturer is doing something with a water supply, or, you know, something like that. You vote with your wallet, and if significant enough people do that, then that has an influence on their bottom line. And, you know, if you let them know that the reason why you're doing that is because you don't agree with policy A, or you do agree with, you know, another company's policy, then, you know, surely that's a way forward, rather than just throwing your hands up and saying, well, you know, I can't actually influence where they spend their money on. I can't actually tell them to put more money into Linux drivers.
Oh, no. I think the point I was driving at is that if you buy the Dell XPS 13, the developer edition pre-installed with Ubuntu, you are clearly chalking up a mark against I want Linux, as opposed to if you say, I want a cheap laptop and I buy some Dell such and such a model, and then I have to fiddle about with, you know, changing the Wi-Fi card, for example, to a model that's compatible with Linux after the fact, Dell will chalk that up as a whatever it came installed with, which is by and large going to be Windows. So it's when there's a Linux option, you should be buying the Linux option, so you make people aware that that's what you want. Because quite often people are buying based on price. You know, people buy ASUS and Acer machines because they're cheaper, and then they then complain about the compatibility issues after the fact, but that's because they've bought a computer that was designed to run with Windows, not a computer that was designed to run with Linux from a vendor that's actually made sure that all the components are Linux compatible.
So what other options are there? You know, I know that Dell, HP, Lenovo, Asus and Acer all sell machines running Linux. Unfortunately, I'd have to get a flight to China or India in order to fulfill that sale, which is kind of undone by the carbon footprint of me flying to the other side of the world to do it. So there's other options. So what are some of the other options?
Well, if you're looking at like tier one type devices, you could, for example, buy yourself a Chrome OS box or laptop, and then flash over the BIOS with an open version and install Linux on it, because they are designed to run Linux at the end of the day.
So it's unfortunate that we've gone how many episodes into this season, and I think we've mentioned Chrome in every single one of them.
I know.
We should have a moratorium on that.
And to be perfectly honest with you, whilst you're getting subsidized hardware, I think they're attractive because they're relatively inexpensive devices and quite well spec'd. I don't advocate that particular avenue myself. It's kind of fun, you know, from the hacking, tinkering point of view. But again, you're not chalking up a hardware sale to Linux. You're basically chalking up a sale for Chrome OS.
Right. And even if you do want to install Linux, it's actually not actually as straightforward as you would expect with a PC you pick up on eBay or something. Some of them you have to actually undo a physical screw on the underside of the machine in order to enable developer mode or elite hacker mode or something. And I was talking with someone who was doing this last night on a Chromebook. It was an Acer C720 or something. And it wasn't seamless. At one point, he got dropped to an initrd prompt, which arguably any Linux distro could do that, really. But it wasn't an out of the box experience. So throw away the Chrome box and the Chromebook and the Chrome bit. What real options do we have?
Well, we're now into the realms of more independent OEMs at this point, aren't we? Do you want some names?
Go for it.
Okay, well, the one that everyone probably knows is System76. I think they, by and large, pioneered this market, didn't they? They specialised in specifically Ubuntu from day one, didn't they? They design computers for Linux compatibility, and they ship Ubuntu on it. And that's great if you're in America.
And we used to record the podcast on one.
Oh, yes.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, that was Tony's machine, was a System 76, wasn't it?
Did he import one?
No, he got given. He won it, didn't he, somewhere?
Yeah, Look wow. Radio Live, I think.
Right, in America.
Amazing. Yeah.
Right.
And then again, in America, you've got The Reason and Think Penguin, and they're both organisations that are making Linux, you know, ensuring Linux compatibility and offering you a choice of distributions that you can have your computer pre-installed with. Doesn't work so well for us here in Europe. For one reason, keyboard layouts are different, and also import duties as a personal purchase are. Yeah, that's the thing. If you're a business, and if you didn't know this, if you're a VAT registered business, there's actually a set of codes you can get from the HMRC, and if you tell the US supplier to put these codes on for computer hardware, you won't have to pay any import duty on your equipment from America.
Well, that's interesting.
But as an individual, you get stung for that, and that pushes the price up quite considerably.
And the margin on hardware is so small that it's not, and the sales of Linux machines is still so small that it's only, you know, it's not viable for a small company to sell Linux machines in Europe, especially when, because in the US you've only got one keyboard layout to worry about, you've only got one language to worry about, and shipping across the UK, across the US is a done deal. It's there's no borders, and it's easy, arguably. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Europe, there's, you know, multiple regions with all kinds of differing rates for postal service and all kinds of differing rates of VAT, which is insane. Despite it largely being a common market, it's actually not as straightforward as you might think. Even in a single country like UK, the amount of money that it costs you to set up a business to do this makes it not as viable.
This is true. Although I do know a company in the UK who are selling Linux compatible hardware now, and are just about to start branching out and making their their hardware available in Europe with all of the keyboard customizations, and that's Entraware.
And, right, so you've got a deal for Ubuntu Mate, haven't you, with Entraware?
That's right. Right. Yeah, yeah. So they're already selling hardware pre-installed with Ubuntu 14.04 and 14.10, and when 15.04 releases, they're going to be adding Ubuntu Mate to that as a pre-install option when you buy your equipment. And they are committed to adding the appropriate keyboard layout options and starting to look at countries that they can ship to in Europe. And there's about four countries that they've earmarked as the ones that they're going to look at first. So you know, in the guise of, you know, organizations like System76 and Za Reason, we may soon have a European alternative where hopefully the import duties are not too awful.
That would be awesome, because one of the things that I noticed about System76 and Za Reason that set them apart from a lot of the others, who, you know, the smaller companies that you hear about, someone will mention it on a Linux user group mailing list. Oh, have you heard about this company that are local to me that sell them? You go to their website and it's very much a box shifter, you know, they're not really doing a good marketing job of selling their laptops. They're not making the laptops look beautiful. They're using the stock photo from the ODM and putting a screenshot on, you know, on the stock image, so it looks like every other laptop. Whereas when you look at something like System76, they do social networking well, and they do promotion of their products really well. So when you see a photo of a new product, it's on a nice wooden table with a toaster in the background and a nice vase, and, you know, the photo's shot really nicely rather than just a stock image. Now, obviously, there's a financial outlay for System76 to do that, but it seems to pay off because people reshare that stuff. Whereas if I'm given a link to a website that shows me 20 different laptops and page down, page down, page down, and they're just a whole bunch of stock images on a white background, I'm not going to feel like that's a store I want to go back to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hmm. So what other devices are there that we can buy that we can support Linux with, if not laptops?
Well, then we get into sort of the embedded devices, don't we? Embedded and mobile. And I think you've got something to do with a Linux mobile device of some nature or other there.
You know, you could buy an Ubuntu phone, and, you know, show support for that in the same way that you could buy a Mozilla phone or a Selfish phone, because they all run Linux underneath the cover, or a Tizen phone, in fact. So, you know, not necessarily specifically Ubuntu phone, but there's actually more Linux options of phones than there are non-Linux options for phones.
And I think what's important in the four that you've just outlined there, Ubuntu, Sailfish, Tizen, and
Mozilla.
One other, Mozilla, they're good open source citizens as well.
Yeah,
you'd like to hope so.
Yeah, so, some more so than others. Right. But yes, there's a absence. Everyone will have spotted the one that's absent there, who maybe started out with a strong open source story, but that seems to be diminishing with every passing week now.
Oh, yes.
What's that?
Android.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We've done so well to, like, talk about Linux in, you know, the commercial world and not mention Android at all. We had a little blip and we mentioned Chrome OS, but so, you know, it's frustrating because, you know, we're looking at it from the, you know, pure Linux point of view of a Linux distribution being Linux plus, you know, GNU utils and Xorg or Wayland or Mir or whatever, and, you know, standard applications on top of it. But the fact is, you know, Android have already done this. They already have a distro, and you could show your support for Linux by buying an Android phone.
Rather slim support for Linux, I think.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to invest your money in a System 76 machine, I would see that the money would be going to the Linux community more directly. And the same is true of EntroWare, because I know what they're already contributing to Linux and open source projects that they require in order to sell their hardware. So they're also good open source citizens.
So what's the issue with Android?
Well, it started out as, you know, it was an open, well, it is, bits of it now are open source, but more and more of what are the core functionality of Android are now being moved into proprietary apps available through the Play Store, rather than a holistic operating system that's all open source.
So if you took yeah, for example, your Sony Android phone, mm-hmm, and you removed everything that was open source free software, you'd actually be left without a store to buy stuff, and without your email client, the camera app, the gallery app to look at your photos, the calendar, the ability to watch videos. You know, there's a string of what you might consider core daily routine applications in Android that are just not there. They've all been migrated to Google services, and those are all proprietary applications. And my personal worry is that more and more of that happens, and you're left with a very thin shim of Android, and the argument is still said that Android is open source because the very thin shim of it is, but then a huge stack that makes the thing actually usable is not.
Yeah. Though, I mean, wasn't Android always controversial? Because I remember when it was first being talked about, there was a talk at Lug Radio Live USA where somebody was complaining about the fact that it was only pretend open source anyway.
Well, it still is, because Google will hold back Android updates until it meets their business requirements. And there are a huge number of other companies that rely on those Android updates. Like, you know, Samsung, for example, very large company with a huge turnover, and they are entirely dependent upon when Google will throw the code over the wall. And if Google decide, you know, to hold back, then maybe Samsung aren't able to release a phone on the timescale that they want to, because, you know, Google are in control of the software stack. And I think that's unfortunate. And I think a lot of people are seeing that. And it's a divisive issue, because a lot of people still think it's good enough, and it's better than the alternative, because as far as many people are concerned, the only alternative is Windows and iOS. So Android is better than those, therefore it's okay. So we've gone on for a little bit longer than we expected, but if I'd be interested in hearing feedback from people about how you support Linux. How do you, what do you do in order to, you know, financially support Linux, whether it's buying hardware or whatever, software, or donating, or, you know, backing projects, or that kind of stuff. I'd really like to hear your feedback. Send it into show@ubuntupodcast.org.
And now it's time for command line love.
You decided not to do the silly voice.
Did. I'm not going to test this rather shonky. Yeah, it's a half-hearted one. I'm not going to test this rather shonky audio setup with some bass tones there. I'm just going to gloss over that.
So I picked this command line love out of my notebook from FOSDEM. While I was at FOSDEM, I wrote a blog article afterwards listing all the talks that I went to. And one of the talks that I really enjoyed was about curl, C-U-R-L, which is a project that actually is more widely used than I thought it was. During the talk, which I think is online, there's a video linked from my blog post. We'll link to my blog post. The project lead for curl talks about where it's used and how it's used. But I discovered through this talk an interesting command line parameter for curl. So curl allows you to it can act as a client for lots of different servers. Typically, you might use it as a client for an HTTP server to get a file from a server, or to get a status of a page from a server, or something like that. But it can also interact with all kinds of other servers that I had no idea about, and it's worth watching the video because it's quite entertaining and good fun. But the parameter that I had never heard of for curl is curl --libcurl. And what this does is it will take whatever parameters you've passed to curl and turn it into a C program that uses the library libcurl. So if you want to write a program that uses curl, rather than shelling out to the operating system and running curl with a bunch of parameters, if you run curl with --libcurl and all the other parameters that you wanted to specify, it will generate a piece of C code for you as an example that you could use in your project. And I thought that was really cool. No, just me?
Yeah. Curl's great. Did you not know about curl?
I knew about curl, but I didn't know about this --libcurl thing. It was brilliant.
Okay.
It's everywhere.
It's pretty cool stuff.
You know, curl is it's probably about as pervasive as, I don't know, BusyBox.
SQLite.
It's everywhere. And it's lovely. So go and watch the video. That's all I'll say about that. It's time for your feedback. And we've got a bunch to get through, so let's crack on. Galen White, sorry if I mispronounced that, Galen White emailed in.
One of my laptops, a Lenovo ThinkPad X201, has an overheating problem, so I'm looking for a replacement laptop. I use my laptop with a docking station, a feature which I enjoy, so it'd be nice to buy a similar system. I've looked at Linlap and other users' comments, plus ThinkWiki, and lastly the Ubuntu certified hardware web pages. So I'd be interested to hear what laptops you use. Maybe you could add a page to your podcast website listing the computers you use and the pros cons of running Linux and any setup issues you've resolved. So sorry if my question is one you've been asked before and may have covered in a previous podcast, hence my suggestion of adding this info as a web page. I have to say that the introduction of Unity made me try other distros, but I was very interested to see Ubuntu Mate, which I'm running on two of my machines, with Zubuntu on the above-mentioned Lenovo, as I've had issues with KeyPassX not working on Ubuntu Mate 64-bit version. Oh, boo.
Yeah, fix it, Martin.
Yeah, well, I'll get back to him about that. I'm contemplating applying thermal paste to the Lenovo, but having to take it apart almost completely is a bit daunting, and I might just end up with a brick. I can really help with this one.
The thought of him applying thermal paste just made me think of him smearing it all over the keyboard for some reason. I don't know why. So how can we help?
So, okay. Well, I am recording this podcast on a ThinkPad X201. So that's what I'm actually using at the moment. Yeah, I've got a ThinkPad X201, a ThinkPad X61S, and a ThinkPad T61P.
Those are one of my favourites.
Yeah, my collection of old machines that I'm using. Something that the Ubuntu Mate community site have recently done is they've put together like a series of question and answers about the computer that you've got and hardware compatibility. And when you've installed Ubuntu Mate on a computer, you can go to the community website, grab the template, fill it in for your machine and submit it. And then it's there as a record of this runs Ubuntu Mate and these are the bits I've got in the machine and this is how you overcome any compatibility issues. And there's a multitude of other websites that provide similar services. So if you've got, you've already identified ThinkWiki there, Galen, but if you've got a different model of laptop, just Google make and model of laptop and Linux and you will find the various websites where people have already submitted all of their, this is how you install it and this is how you make the fingerprint reader work and things of that nature.
Hmm. So what are you using, Laura?
My Dell XPS 13 from 2013, will it be?
So I'm using a ThinkPad X220 and Samantha's using a ThinkPad X61S on recommendation of Martin. Bought that on eBay for £60. So actually, Laura, you're the only one supporting Linux by buying a machine. Interesting.
Yeah,
and I think the reason is that, as you say, we bought those ThinkPad X61Ss for £60. I can afford £60 for a new computer. Yeah. You know, if I go looking for a new computer, you're looking at many hundreds of pounds, and that's oftentimes not possible.
So
yeah, the XPS wasn't cheap.
No.
It is,
but it's a lovely machine. Yes, we all covet your laptop whenever we see it. Anyway, moving on. Yui Shurkamp emailed in to say,
"Hi folks, stellar work on your 7th show anniversary and great to have you back on the air after the break. Keep up the good work. Here's to the next 7 years of fun and friendly banter."
Oh, when I read that, 7 more years. Oh, crikey.
That's quite a long time, isn't it?
Oh my God, I'll be 50. Moving on. Mike emailed in about Chromebooks.
Oh, goodness. I'm spotting a trend here with the long...
Yeah, we give all the long ones to you, Martin. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. We did trim this one down. It was quite chunky, but I think there's some sensible comments in this. Over to you, Martin.
Okay. Chrome OS provides a level of appliance computing much like iOS or Android, but in a more traditional form factor of laptop or desktop. My cheap, simple little Celeron-based unit with 2 gigs of RAM is blazingly fast for everyday usage and requires only the very slightest bit of maintenance. Don't get me wrong, I'm writing this from my Zubuntu box, which is my daily driver desktop. I love traditional Linux. I also love both apples and oranges. Chrome OS meets a purpose and meets it brilliantly. It is great for education, I think. It might not be as fully available for tinkering as something like Windows or Linux, but we must remember the purpose of Chromebooks in education is not specifically for computing education, but general education. Merits of simplicity and ease of maintenance implementation at scale are very relevant. The worry over cloud computing is something I can't agree with. It's frankly just the way the world largely works today. I see the Chrome OS approach, which is largely one of very thin, light client-type OS in service of the internet as a platform, as having a lot of merit for education. A child isn't tied to one particular machine with worry about their work if that machine breaks or is lost or stolen. Their content lives in the cloud. Replacing the hardware is a function of moments. It also allows multiple students to utilize the same machine with ease. It allows a child to work on their assignments from different machines very flexibly. I have even touched on using traditional Linux on Chromebooks, which is of course possible for power users. Frankly, I'm hopeful Google will implement some type of container technology directly into Chrome OS, which I think would have a lot of possibilities. In summation, Chrome OS is brilliant stuff for many people and many usage models, and especially for education. Traditional Linux might be a more desirable kind of Apple than Microsoft Windows Apple, or even, confusingly, an Apple OS X Apple, but Chrome OS is an orange, and that ain't bad.
So I think this was in response to when I kind of bitched and moaned about Chrome OS in education and the fact that we're instilling the thought in children that they should store their data on other people's computers, and that that was fine.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with that. And I still don't agree with that. And I and actually, and the fact that, sorry, Laura, the fact that he says it's not just for people learning programming, but for general computing, that's worse, because people learning general computing don't know better. And those are the people who are being indoctrinated into, you know, 20 years ago would have been indoctrinated into using Microsoft Office in the workplace. And that's the norm, the standard. And now they're being indoctrinated into put your stuff on other people's computers. And that's the norm. And I disagree with that fundamentally.
Yeah, and I mean, the other issue is just practicality, in that I'm not convinced that you can just get a connection anywhere and whenever you want. I don't see that happening at the moment. It's either too expensive or there's just not the coverage, and I'm
sure that will improve. And in schools,
I'm sure it will, but
even then in schools it doesn't improve, because, like, you know, my wife often complains to me that she's put a document at school, they use Google Docs, and she's put a document in Google Docs, and then suddenly the internet goes down, or the twerp dealing with the computers unplugs the internet connection. Their internet was down for 2 days recently. 2 days with no access to the presentations you've created or documents you've created. That's pretty significant. And they don't use Chrome or Chromebooks at all. They're using Windows, but they've chosen to put all their documents in Google Docs. That's a flaw. Seriously.
But also, I mean, just generally people using a cloud-based environment, whether that's because they use it at school and so they use it at home and things, the internet just isn't everywhere.
No, I completely agree. I could be on an aeroplane and, you know, or the outback or wherever. Yes, anyway, we've done that to death, I think. Okay. We're running out of time, so let's just jump to one final email from Joe Ressington, who's on every other Linux podcast, who mailed in with some feedback about our audio.
Hi, just listen to episode 8, season 4, and as usual, the content was good, but there were periods where some of you were only in one speaker of the headphone. This makes listening in bed, which is what I tried to do last night, rather tricky. Just thought I'd let you know in case no one else has told you. Presumably it wasn't deliberate. Anyway, good to have you back.
Yes, it was deliberate. We try and upset your sleeping habits as much as possible, Joe. No, it was a mistake during the post edit, and Mark saw the mail and fixed it, and we created the audio and published it, and I don't think many people noticed. I don't think anyone noticed the re-download of the MP3 or OGG file. So we really appreciate the feedback. We know that sometimes the audio sucks, and we're doing whatever we can to improve it. So let us know. Try not to write pages and pages of information about how our audio sucks, because that's really depressing. But
and we just have to spend ages editing it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's all of your feedback. Send more to show@ubuntupodcast.org or to our Twitter handle, which is @UbuntuPodcast.
And that's all for episode 4. We'll be back next week. No, it's episode 5, I think. Anyway, we'll be back next week when we'll have more news, comment and discussion.
Gosh, that was a long one. I think I've played the wrong clip. Oh, well.
Samantha keeps crushing your vocals.
Yeah, she does. I'm really sorry about that. Thank you again, Martin, for joining us. And we'll be
You're
back
welcome.
Next week, whatever date that is.
Yeah.
21st?
Something like that.
See you then.
Crap.